The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hi.
Hi.
I was waiting for you to come in. It's been a wreck without you, honestly. It's been a nightmare. And I just want to say this.
It's been the nightmare before Christmas, it's technically.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. It's been the nightmare before Christmas. And like, it just wasn't the same without you. And you were sick horrendously with the flu. And you had texted me and Matt on Tuesday and you were like, "I'm barfing."
I know.
Were like, "Don't come in. Don't touch us.
Yeah.
Please stay away." Mm-hmm. And I had to like carry the whole show. Thank God for Megan, not Matt.
Yes.
And Matt had this whole idea about, let's not even mention that John's part of the podcast. Yeah. We're murdering John Lennon. And then I freaked out because I knew
there was a revolt.
And I knew people were going to, there were going to be picket lines. Yeah. People were going to get pissed. And I was like, "John, you have to tell the,
you have to
tell the public." And on top of that, I recorded this part two, which we're doing today.
Yeah.
And I think it was the Christmas gods that said, "Absolutely not, Darren. You should not do another episode on your own. You should re-record with John." And that is what we're doing today. So this is part two of John Lennon, but Johnny is back.
There's a lot to break down here at the top.
The band's back together.
The band is back together.
Thank God.
Thank God. Although, not to take away from anything that you guys did last week, by the way, Megan's here in the studio with us. So let's take it like step by step here before we get into the case, because I want people to kind of understand like what is happening, because a lot of Facebook fans.
Explain it to me, please. Explain it to me.
So Tuesday, I'm here at work, and I had a great day at work. Let me, like, just as a reminder,
day, yeah.
I had a great day. Went home. So I had a soy milk or an almond milk latte at like 4:30 on Tuesday of last week. Or, you know, if you're listening to this later on, it was in December.
Yeah.
And
just for clarification.
Yeah, just for clarification. But then I got home that night from work around 7 o'clock, and my stomach was just like so unsettled. And I was like, "God, did I eat? What did I eat today?" Like, I didn't have any kind of crazy abnormal lunch.
A couple people were thinking it might have been that, like, iceberg or romaine, well, like, lettuce breakout.
Because
so everyone
I
was like,
saying,
"Does he have fucking E. coli or something?"
Well, I posted something on my Instagram or Twitter or something somewhere. When I was back in Maryland, amidst the E. coli outbreak, I ordered a wrap the Sunday before I left to come back from Thanksgiving, and they had like a dirty, literally dirt on a piece of romaine lettuce on my wrap.
Hell.
And I was like, "This can't be romaine lettuce. There's no way they're putting romaine lettuce on wraps back then." It was, and I took it off and I ate it. I feel like if it was E. coli, I would not be here today, but
yeah, I think you would have been
so
like,
it's not E. coli.
Thought up at both ends.
Right, right.
Did you get a haircut?
I did.
You look good.
Thank you. Yeah. You're the only person who's noticed today. Because you love
me.
Absence
makes the heart grow fonder.
I know.
I'm just so happy you're back.
Thank you. Thank you. I know. I'm trying to wrap all of this up so we can get to the good stuff. But so many people were confused and anxious. I feel like we have to mention it. So got home, had the stomach ache.
Right.
And it was like, okay, it was unsettling. And I was like, maybe if I take some Tums, you know, it'll settle down a little bit.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, I lay down on the bed.
Oh, no.
And it's just getting worse.
Oh, no.
By the minute. And it hadn't even occurred to me that it could be the stomach flu, because I haven't had the stomach flu since I was in high school.
I literally didn't even know that you, like, threw up from the flu. And Matt was like, what do you think like a stomach flu is? And I was like, I literally haven't had it in 20 years.
Yeah.
I can't even remember what it feels like to have the flu.
Well, you know, to be fair and to support you on this, I didn't realize the flu was two different things. There's influenza. influenza, which is your cold, not even nausea, but like headache, fever, chills that go, that comes and goes. People get that pretty often, actually.
Yeah.
The stomach flu.
Entirely different.
Is a whole other ball game where you are hurling, where things are, you know, you're dehydrating. It's a very disgusting, sad scenario.
You're in your best state.
No, okay. Not at all. Okay. So anyway, just to fast forward here. So I'm like full on stomach unsettled.
Mess.
Not sure what's going on around like 9, I would say like 9:30.
Yeah, you text us pretty later at night.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
you
yeah.
Probably so didn't then, text till 10 maybe.
Well, cut to, I end up barfing. Oh, okay. And I was like, texted you guys immediately because we were meant to record the very next day, like 3 episodes or something. And I was like, what a horrible time that this could possibly happen.
Well, we knew that we were covering John Lennon and you had been so excited. So
I know, I think this was both of our ideas.
So basically two Johns had died
that week, yeah. So in the midst of all of that, you know, I'm sick, whatever, and I'll get to the thank yous at the end of this episode, but I wanted to mention what happened with me not being on the show. You kind of prefaced it.
Yes.
So you can maybe fill this in a little bit, but basically what happened was then on Wednesday, you guys recorded the show.
And Matt had an idea.
And Matt had another bad idea.
He had his own idea, which I feel like is an oxymoron to be like Matt's bad idea. It's right. Like Matt's idea.
So I'm like, oh, go ahead.
No. We had texted you because Matt had this idea to like just not mention that you would, like, you were never a part of the show, like as if you had never existed. He was like, just record normally.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, okay. And I was like, are we sure John's going to be happy with that? Like, he's texting me on the side with you,
I
was like, we sure happy, John's going to be like happy with this?
Yeah, yeah.
Or like,
thank you, Darren.
Whatever.
Yeah.
So then Matt texts you on the group text. And you were like, I can't remember what he said.
It.
Yeah, you were like, I'm down. Like,
he was basically saying, hey, just an FYI. And Megan sent me an email as well just to give me an FYI. Like, we're going to pretend like you were either like fired or walked off the show and not mention it.
Because the band teammates change and the bandmates change all the time.
Sure.
It was the death of John.
And I wasn't even sure you guys were going to record. So the fact that you guys had a plan, I mean, I was so out of it. I was like, whatever. I don't care what you guys do at this point.
Right, exactly.
So then another shot comes out Thursday.
Yeah.
And it's so funny because I kind of forgot about it. And then I wake up and I'm like, oh, this is what the fans like wake up to, you know, like,
totally.
Oh, a new episode. And I hadn't heard it.
You had to listen to it.
So I listened to it.
Yeah.
And I will tell you, I think I texted you guys. I was kind of depressed about it because I was like,
it definitely wasn't the same.
Well, it wasn't the same. And that's fine. Like, you guys did a great job, by the way. And
my voice was dead.
I could tell. Yes. It was a little struggling at this point. But I want to say, I'm not just saying this as someone who's on the show and is like blowing smoke. I really think that the show on its own was kind of funny and like fun, but it did kind of make me sad because I was like, wow, this is what life would be like if like I didn't exist. If Thanos snapped his finger and I disappeared, like in some of the, spoiler alert, in some of the Marvel movies, this is what it would feel
spoiler
like.
Spoiler alert for all those people who watch Marvel movies.
Maybe,
I am not one of them.
Yeah.
And well, I thought it was like, okay, it's good for you. This was humbling for you.
It was.
Your ego was getting too big. And I was like, listen.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
He's sick. He's not allowed to be sick again.
Yeah.
We're making this a statement.
I know.
And I feel like you're not going to be sick again.
You know what I mean?
It was your choice.
You taught my body a lesson. That's the best way we can look at this.
I will say, though, like, and I think I take it like advantage of the fact that we have such good like friendship chemistry.
Yes.
But without you, it was just, it was not as great. I mean, Megan and amazing job.
Absolutely.
Matt has his moments. But without you, I could just, it solidified our chemistry, I felt like. Even Matt said it too at the end
of the
day.
Matt did, yeah, he texted us that too. I agree. I think that, you know, one of the reasons you and I started doing this stuff is because we kind of knew what we could bring to the microphone.
Of course, yeah.
And, you know, we both meet so many people and so many personalities, but there's something about the way you and I can talk to each other. And I think that really kind of brings that out. Not to toot my own horn, but like the first 5 minutes.
Don't make me take you off the show again.
Back. I know, right?
Don't make me do it by myself.
But yeah, I definitely think it's a different show. It's not better or worse. I think it's just a different style of show.
I'm glad you're here, though, for part two. But also, did you text Matt yesterday about his birthday?
No.
I did.
Oh, good for you.
I did. I was recovering.
I was recovering, guys. Mm-hmm. I want to wrap up the last part of this because I think it's interesting.
Wrap it up.
So finally, so then after Matt tells me about what you guys are doing, he says, maybe you should post something in the Facebook group to like play along with it.
Right.
And I was like, yeah, I was kind of thinking that too.
I should have known that Matt never has a good idea.
I know. And I was a little apprehensive, to be honest, because I didn't want to go too far with it to the point where we were going to have to like pick up the tracks, which is what ended up happening.
I didn't want to lose fans, and like right. we might have now, you know, and so, I'm like, Matt.
If you're in the Facebook group, and if you're not, you should follow us or join it, because it's a lot of fun, aside from this moment. But I posted a thing that was like, wow, today's another shot was interesting.
Really surprising. Yeah, which surprising. Just furthered the questions.
I know, and I was like, if you have any questions, let me know. I'll try to answer them. And everyone was like, what is happening? Yeah. So then I was like texting you, and I was like, okay, there's a little bit of a backlash.
Yeah, we were like, let's
monitor it. Yeah, let's monitor. That's right. So we said, let's look at it tomorrow morning. Yep. If there's like a big, well, 9, 8. I got a text.
You texted me
like 7 a.m. I wasn't even awake yet. I may have just fallen asleep because I couldn't sleep with all these
Even Aaron
drugs.
Was like, you need to backtrack on this. Yeah, this isn't working.
Well, you had texted me and you were like, I really don't think that we should keep going with this. And I hadn't even looked at the Facebook group yet. But yeah, a lot of you guys, thank you for being so sweet, were wondering about what was going on. Anyway, long story short, I had to come in and say, guys, thank you for your thoughts and prayers. Yeah. But
it was really cute because some people were like, I'm not going to listen to the show without you. And I was like, I'm not listening to the show without him. I was like, I have no feelings on this, but I need Johnny. Are you guys think I'm even more of an asshole than I normally am? And then I like had all these, I like got sensitive over the weekend.
Well, I appreciate that. And it's not just me. It's really like we were just saying, it's us. It's the show that we created is no longer there. So
we're just happy you're here for part two.
Thank you. Yeah. So part two of the Beatles do you want to tell people like what you guys had originally recorded this, right?
Yeah. So actually we did literally probably an hour and a half of the two part episodes, and then we did another shot. So by the time another shot had come around, I was literally shot and I was just so dead. And so I don't even remember like what we said, except I know that it was Matt's grandmother who passed away. And then,
oh my God,
her grandmother. And then Miles was like hitting them with a broom, which was hilarious.
That episode, I'm so sad I missed those stories.
It was funny.
Cause I was cackling along with you guys. And it really felt like a listener for the first time.
It was
like,
funny.
This is what people like about this show.
Yeah. And
I mean,
so,
it's sad cause it's, you know,
no, it's
the
sad. Great,
you know, but funny at the same time.
I didn't know we were going to, first we were thinking of doing in two parts, but then literally I got through like half of the episode and Megan stopped me and she was like, just FYI, we're at like 50
we're
minutes and
time.
I had 8 more pages. So she was like,
God.
Let's make this two parts. Smart. Fine. Yeah. And then something happened where like the second part, like the file got corrupted and we found out today.
It got sick like me.
It got sick. Yeah. It was podcast gods defending John. I think John like purposely did this and just so you could be back on the show
right away.
But it was great because now we get to finish out part two, which is today, talking about John Lennon, which, cause there's so much stuff to get through. And since Matt isn't here today, we're not running full steam.
Yeah.
But my friends, so I grew up in Montclair, New Jersey.
Yeah.
And my friends from high school actually started their own whiskey company called Misunderstood Whiskey, which is
amazing.
Ginger spiced whiskey.
My kind of spice.
I knew you would like it.
Hello,
especially
is there a sporty spice whiskey? Is there a scary spice whiskey?
Who is your favorite?
I can't say all these. I can't choose. It's like choosing
it's
a favorite
children.
Child.
Yeah. I'd be a favorite
child. I mean,
child.
When I was in middle school, and you had to choose.
Right.
And a lot of my other guy friends just were like, oh my God, Posh Spice is so hot. I didn't want to be like them. So I was like, okay, I'll choose Baby Spice because I think she's cute. And I named my cat Emma after her. So Baby Spice was
technically.
It's a lot going on in my head.
There's a lot to unpack there, but we'll save that for another show.
Yeah.
Okay.
This whole podcast is just figuring my whole Spice Girls obsession.
You're coming
out.
Back into the fold. Well, this is some Misunderstood Ginger Spice Whiskey, and I think it is made in Bardstown, Kentucky.
It's the blood of Jerry Hallowell, is what it is.
It is. It's produced and bottled in Bardstown, Kentucky, so you know it's fucking authentic.
Yeah.
But I thought me, you, and Megan, because
let's
Matt's not here, and this is going to be the best drink we've ever had, take a little
shot
while we do part two of John
Cheers,
Lennon.
Cheers, bitches. Nice.
Good to have you back, John.
Thank you.
It smells really
Oh, gingery.
Like spice. It smells really, really spice. Very fall.
I'm going to sip first because I don't know. It's not that I'm still queasy, but I'm still sensitive maybe.
Sip it lightly. The ginger's going to hit at the tip of your tongue.
Ooh,
it's really
it does.
Good. You could have it.
It's
rarely
so smooth.
Drink whiskey either neat or on the rocks. I don't really mind either way, but
ooh,
I rarely drink
burning.
It just and like by itself. This one I definitely could sip because it's so nice. Doesn't it warm your body?
It's my whole like trachea is on fire at the moment.
And before we get into this, I have to say, so my friends gave me the bottle, which is a normal looking bottle. They put a little tiny Santa hat on it.
Right. And you.
And I open it up, you know, and I throw the Santa hat away or whatever. And Megan's like, did you
throw that tiny hat away?
Yeah. Like, did you do that? And I was like, yeah, do you want it? She's like, I kind of do. I was like, for your taxidermy? She's like, yes. I dug it out of the trash and I gave it to Megan. So Megan, you're fucking welcome.
So this holiday season, I want to see one of those taxidermy animals.
We need
with
pictures
your hat
posted.
On.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, don't mess around, Megan.
Okay, so let's guys, back to business here on Martinis and Murder. Let's get into the second part of the Beatles here.
The actual murder.
With the actual murder of John Lennon. So by 1980, the Beatles were as big as ever, despite having acrimoniously broken up 10 years earlier, which I hadn't quite thought of. They did definitely break up.
No, they did. They couldn't really tour anymore by the end of it anyway. And so then they all went off to go do their solo projects.
It's just amazing that even 10 years later, you know. Well, that autumn, John Lennon and Yoko Ono released the album Double Fantasy. It was Lennon's first new record after a five-year hiatus following the birth of his son Sean in 1975. He was busy recording his follow-up when on the night of December 8th, 1980, he was murdered by Mark David Chapman in front of the Dakota, the luxury apartment building on Manhattan's Upper West Side where Lennon and Ono had lived since 1973.
And I know this is coming out December 11th, but December 8th is obviously this last Saturday, and they always do something amazing in Strawberry Fields in Central Park. Like a whole, the Meatles do this whole thing where everyone sings along, and I think Yoko has done a really, really good job of preserving continuing his legacy.
By the way, you can go to this Dakota. I mean, you can't go into the Dakota.
You can actually see exactly where he was shot. I mean, there's still that
like
stand
the archway,
there. There's still the archway. Everything's really the same. I mean, it's gorgeous. Yeah. My dad had a coworker that worked in the Dakota, so my parents were there for Christmas parties.
Wow. Oh my
which
God.
Is just insanely cool. They said it was like an awesome, awesome building.
I'm sure. A lot of celebrities have lived there since.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
Chapman was born in Fort Worth, Texas in 1955 and grew up a military brat before his family settled in Decatur, Georgia when he was 7 years old. He would later tell a psychologist hired by his attorney that his father abused his mother, according to People. I was going to say magazine, but I guess it's online, potentially.
Yeah, it's not according to People. Like, it's not according to, like, on the street is.
Yeah, right. Like, according to People out there.
Right.
He said, quote, he would beat her up. I'd wake up hearing my mother screaming my name, and it just scared the fire out of me. And I'd run in there and put out my fists and make him go away. Sometimes I think, actually, I pushed him away, end quote. Mark's mother downplayed the allegations in an interview with People magazine. About his father, Mark also told the psychologist, according to People, quote, he just never showed me love in any way, at least not emotionally. He just gave money. Mother always told me my father couldn't show his feelings, but gave in other ways. I'm trying to figure out what I'm reading here.
It's in English. Is that hard?
I know. English is really hard for me, guys.
Okay.
I'm getting back
sure.
in the groove here, okay?
Yeah, you got to read again.
Continuing with the quote, he was always home. He never drank, things like that. But I needed more than just a father who was responsible morally. I needed emotional love and support, which I never got. I don't think I ever hugged my father. He never told me he loved me. And he never said he was sorry. One of those guys, end quote. So there's a lot going on here that I didn't actually know about him.
Yeah, and we don't really, you know, we say enough about Mark David Chapman. I think, you know, we go into a few more details here, but we're not really talking about a lot of his history.
Right.
But this is a common theme with things that we really talk about.
Totally.
And I think, you know, it's good that his father gave money, like that's good, right? He had a roof over his head and he clearly had like financial support. But there's so much more that goes into the psychological well-being of a person, let alone a child,
right?
Not just money.
Right, exactly, Darren.
Also with that quote, you know, if Matt were here, he'd be like, and then mother says, every time mother is
like,
he loves
a mother
like,
moment.
Mother.
Oh my God.
Yes. Yes.
Commenting to the Daily Mail about how Mark's father had treated him, his stepsister said, quote, I don't think for a moment he was ever abusive to that child at all, because the man I knew didn't do that. I never heard him raise his voice, end quote. By his early teens, Mark Chapman was experimenting with drugs, including marijuana, LSD, and heroin, according to People. A friend of Mark's told People, quote, he tripped all the time, sometimes for 4 or 5 days in a row. It was mostly LSD, but he took a lot of mescaline and barbiturates, too. Heroin was his favorite drug until a friend of his got burned by it. He said it turned everything white, like heaven, end quote. That's not a good place to be.
Yeah, I've never taken LSD, but I imagine that it's not one of those things. Well, you don't want to be on any drug consistently for like
days
at a time.
Yeah. He was also a huge Beatles fan, as you probably could guess. He would later tell CNN, quote, I always wanted to be a Beatle, end quote. And he recounted how during one acid trip, he imagined he had become Lennon himself.
I mean, okay, everyone wants to be a Beatle.
Yeah, of course.
That's the thing what makes it so fucking eerie. You know what I mean? Like this guy, not only, it had nothing to do with hatred. It was like, I want to be you so badly.
Well, it's almost like, does he want to be a Beatle or does he want the attention that the Beatles
get? Exactly. Well, I think there's that, right? Yeah. I don't know if he wants to change the world musically or just have the attention. You're right.
Yeah, I'm curious if he was a musician in any way.
In his head.
But that all changed in his junior year of high school when Chapman became a born-again Christian.
Fun
times. As part of his newfound faith, Chapman turned against the band he had once loved, particularly Lennon, who in a 1966 interview with Rolling Stone had claimed the Beatles were, quote, more popular than Jesus.
Now, I've seen so many documentaries about the Beatles.
Yeah,
I've watched
the
anthology. I've seen 8 Days a Week. And when John Lennon said this, it was just a cultural uproar.
Yeah.
How could, you know, when he wasn't saying it, like, he's saying that, like, we're just as popular. No, he was trying to use a cultural figure that everyone knows. You know what I
mean?
Like Santa Claus is the only thing I could think of that like everyone knows around the world. And, you know, I mean, but obviously with religious people, especially if you're born again, that's going to fucking piss you off.
Well, I think that this comment too, in the scope of like music history, you know, not that there wasn't religious imagery in music at this point at all. I mean, of course there was, but this was the first time where I feel like it kind of set artists off in a sense that they were like, oh, people really reacted to that religious comment by John Lennon. And then you started seeing a lot of religious imagery in pop music from that moment forward.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. He was further incensed by Lennon's 1971 single Imagine, which is one of my all-time favorites, in which he sang, "Imagine there's no heaven, it's easy if you try, no hell below us, above us only sky." And I would just like to take this moment to say that of all of the arrangements, of all the covers of Imagine out there, David Archuleta's...
Here we go, people. Turn it off now. Part two is done.
His cover.
Fade to black. I just want to thank the researchers for this episode.
Uh-huh.
Fade to black.
David Archuleta's cover of Imagine from the 2008 American Idol season is phenomenal. And you should.
I'm sure Paul McCartney is like, wow, I can't believe David Archuleta.
It. He may have. You never know.
Yeah,
by the way, Simon Cowell thought it was amazing.
Oh, well, if Simon Cowell thought it was amazing.
Look it up on YouTube.
Even Megan just threw her hands up in the air.
Look it up on YouTube. It was incredible.
See,
love you,
this
David.
Is what we would have missed when I was doing it by myself.
Right.
I failed to mention
musical,
David Archuleta. And so
my
thank God you're
influence.
Here.
I'm so glad I could influence
my Lord.
This show. Anyway, according to friends, Chapman would change the lyrics to, quote, "Imagine if John were dead," according to CNN.
Sunny and bright.
Cool. Sounds fun. Chapman worked as a YMCA camp counselor and later at a resettlement camp for Vietnamese refugees. Following his high school girlfriend, he enrolled at Covenant College, an evangelical college, but got poor grades and dropped out, according to the Daily Mail. He took firearms training classes and became an armed security guard at a hospital outside of Atlanta, according to People. So this is all interesting backstory about him that I wasn't even aware of.
It is, because he seems to be, you know, like a good person, right?
Yeah, like
helping
these
refugees
yeah.
and, you know, he's got a girlfriend, he's enrolling in college, even firearms training classes. At least he's willing to, you know, take the safety precaution and take the classes. And he's an armed security guard at a hospital, but it's a little bit like, was he how long did he know? And maybe it wasn't. Maybe it's something he didn't know, but I am curious about it.
Yeah, me too.
Well, Disaffected and Depressed, which I said should be the name of our podcast.
Oh my God, I love the name of that. I mean, that really hits all of the
Disaffected
topics.
And Depressed with Darren and John.
Darren
That's
and
amazing.
John. I mean, love it.
Chapman became obsessed with J.D. Salinger's 1951 novel, The Catcher in the Rye, which chronicles the angst and disillusion of prep school teenager Holden Caulfield, telling CNN, quote, "I really identified with him. His plight, his loneliness, his alienation from society." That's everybody feeling that way. Like, that's why Catcher in the Rye is so good, because it says something. It's like the fucking horoscope, right? Like,
yeah.
It speaks to everybody.
Yeah, I mean, everyone has felt this in some sense.
Of course.
And probably in a prolonged way for some amount of time.
Right.
Myself included, I really connect with these words.
Yeah,
just putting
absolutely.
It out there.
Well, in 1977, Chapman traveled to Hawaii and twice tried to kill himself, but was unsuccessful and actually later told a friend, quote, "I was such a failure, I even failed at killing myself," according to People. That is like a horrible, talk about disaffected and,
tragedy,
and depressed.
Yeah.
Like, to be in the mindset to want to kill yourself and then not to be able to do it and then feel like yourself even more of a failure.
Yeah.
I can't imagine that. After being treated for clinical depression at Oahu's Castle Memorial Hospital, he began working there in housekeeping, but later quit and began working as a security guard again, according to CNN.
Now, this is one of those scenarios where it's like, okay, you clearly have some mental illness here. Or meant something that needs treated.
Yeah.
And now they're hiring him back as a security guard, where I feel like in our world today, with gun violence and the awareness of mental illness with gun people who have guns, that would be a huge red flag,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I wonder how much how different it would be now.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
40 years later, basically.
Right.
Well, in 1979, Chapman married 26-year-old travel agent Gloria Abe, who, like Lennon's wife Yoko Ono, was actually of Japanese heritage. According to CNN. And soon after they were married, Chapman began drinking heavily, and on a couple of occasions, she told the Mirror, "He hurt me physically." Mm. Chapman's mental state continued to deteriorate, and he became fixated on Lennon, who a psychologist said he considered a phony, according to the New York Times. And according to the book Let Me Take You Down by Jack Jones, Chapman had said, quote, "He told us to imagine no possessions, and there he was with millions of dollars and yachts and farms and country estates, laughing at people like me who had believed the lies and bought the records and built a big part of their lives around his music."
But this is such a projection. It's
of course. And like,
you're coming up with this scenario in your head.
And he's saying, like, and let me just finish this quote, and then I'll sort of say it. So finish it. "I would listen to his music and I would get angry at him for saying that he didn't believe in God," he later recalled, also according to Let Me Take You Down by Jack Jones. But Here's the thing about the Lennon song is, like, he's taking everything he's saying, like, literally, like,
right.
You know, "I have no possessions." It's not, he's not saying that. What he's saying is, like, think of how much more peaceful the world would be if all of us had no religion, if all of us didn't have this stuff. Not that he doesn't, but he was sort of just trying to think of a more perfect world. And obviously,
the general consensus of a population, not necessarily in each individual person.
Well, right,
and
exactly.
How they react to it. Yeah,
exactly. Like, he's trying to be a spokesman for peace.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Which is sort of ironic, because in part one, you know, we do talk about his a little bit, you know, the abusive things that got said about him and sort of how he treated women originally, how he had a lot of anger issues. And so we kind of said maybe he's doing this for the betterment. Like, he recognizes that in himself. So this is what he can do to sort of atone for those sins.
Interesting.
Well, Gloria Abe, now Gloria Chapman, said her husband started chanting, quote, "The phony must die, says the catcher in the rye. Don't believe in John Lennon. Imagine John Lennon is dead." Over and over again, according to the rap.
Weird.
In October 1980, according to CNN, Chapman quit his job as a security guard and signed himself out as John Lennon, then flew to New York with a .38 caliber handgun with the intention of killing Lennon, but returned to Hawaii after being unable to purchase bullets. The unable to purchase bullets I find to be fascinating, because he got the gun. He was able to travel with the gun, you know what I mean? Like, everything else seemed fine. Bullets seemed like the easiest part to get.
Well, and I wonder why exactly? Like, we don't have the research in front of us,
but
I'm curious if it was like, oh no, you've shown signs that we can't sell you these things. It's just such a different world. I have no idea.
Me too. And I will say, so in New York City, you know, they don't update their apartment like directories on the door that often. Like, I've never had my name on the door. It's always been something from like 20 years ago.
Yeah.
But I was looking at the directory in my building, which is a mirrored apartment building to the one next to me.
Uh-huh.
And I was looking at the names from however long ago, and it says Lennon, J.
No.
I wish.
Maybe.
I'm going with that.
Go with it. Yeah, go with it.
CNN also reports by early December, he was back in New York and began stalking Lennon and actually planning his murder.
Not to interrupt you, but I do want to say, because Matt has a lot of interesting stories about the apartment building that he lived in when he first moved to New York.
Yeah.
We should ask him to bring that up next time.
Yeah, we should, but then he's going to talk.
But then there's a whole, you're right.
There's that whole thing.
Why would I do that? Let's keep going.
On the morning of December 8th, 1980, Chapman went to the Dakota, standing outside with other Lennon fans who regularly waited for a glimpse of their idol and the chance to ask him for an autograph. Well, when Lennon and Ono left the Dakota that afternoon on their way to a recording session, Chapman asked Lennon to sign his copy of Double Fantasy. Quote, which he did very generously, Chapman would later tell Larry King, which is also just so fucking with my mind in any sort of way. Like, that's the biggest mind fuck ever.
I know.
Sean Lennon, by the way, who was John and Yoko's son, who we mentioned, had been born in 1975, and he was only 5 years old when this happened, okay? Amateur photographer and Beatles fan Paul Goresh snapped a picture of Lennon signing the record of the man who hours later would kill him, according to the New York Daily News. Goresh, by the way, actually died earlier this year.
Yeah.
But before he died, he told NJ.com, quote, "Nobody picked up any sign of Chapman being a danger. He looked like the kid that got picked on in the school playground. He looks like if you blew on him, he would have fallen over. If you cracked him in the jaw, he would get knocked out. There was nothing to the guy," end quote. So he wasn't menacing.
No, not at all. You know, sorry.
No, I was going to say, he seems kind of like nerdy-ish.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean?
Just for those of you who may not know this story already, there, just to set this up, because we're going to get into the second part of him coming in here. Basically, just to clarify, Chapman approached Lennon earlier in the day, and that's when he signed his record.
That's exactly right.
And then I guess
this
we'll
happens
find
at
out.
Night when yes. when he's kind of coming home from his day.
Exactly.
But at least it sets up that one, like, not that crazy because a bunch of fans A, know where Lennon lives, and so they're going to stand outside. But two, like, it was a common thing, so security was there. Fucking photographer is there,
Yeah. That's interesting. That's a good note.
Well, at 10:50 p.m. that night, a white limousine dropped off Lennon and Ono in front of the Dakota. Obviously, you know, most people are going to assume that that's probably John Lennon getting dropped off.
Sure.
The Washington Post reported that as they walked into the building's courtyard, Chapman emerged from the shadows and said very politely, "Mr. Lennon." Chapman got into a military crouch and fired five times and four of the shots hitting Lennon, according to the Washington Post. Now, you can walk by the Dakota and see exactly where this happened.
Totally.
A doorman at the Dakota, whose face was covered in John Lennon's blood, knocked the gun out of Chapman's hand and screamed, "Do you know what you just did?" according to the Washington Post. "I just shot John Lennon," Chapman allegedly replied with a smirk, according to the Post, which just...
Yeah, it's
the
worst.
Oh, my God. Chapman calmly waited at the crime scene for police. Quote, "He never saw anything coming," Chapman said later, according to CNN. In his jacket pocket was a copy of The Catcher in the Rye, which Chapman had bought earlier that day and written in. Chapman had signed the book and wrote, "This is my statement," with the word "this" underlined, according to The Nation.
Interesting.
Police rushed Lennon to St. Luke's Roosevelt Hospital Center, where he was pronounced dead at 11:15 p.m. So literally 25 minutes later, he was pronounced dead. He was only 40 years old. And after being taken into custody, Chapman told police, quote, "The large part of me is Holden Caulfield. The small part of me must be the devil," according to AV Club. Also a Matt quote, by the way.
Yeah.
In August of 1981, Chapman pleaded guilty and was sentenced to 20 years to life in prison, according to the New York Times. At his sentencing, Chapman read a passage from The Catcher in the Rye. He first became eligible for parole in 2000. And actually, in August of this year, just a few months ago, Chapman was denied parole for the 10th time, according to the Associated Press, and will remain behind bars for at least two more years from this last August. I think it's actually kind of dangerous to have him out because the outrage that this caused everything that had happened, you know, and before this we talked about the Manson murders and just like literally as famous as Jesus, the outrage that it still has caused and what John Lennon could have really brought to the world.
For sure.
I honestly think someone will assassinate Mark David Chapman very quickly. He'll never have a normal life even if he gets out. And granted, he's older now, but I don't think it would be a life worth living.
No, I mean, I don't know exactly how old he is at this point, but it's like, I don't know. It's so disturbing that there's even a possibility of parole for somebody who doesn't have any real empathy. You know what I'm saying?
He's so famous now. You know what I mean? Like, he always wanted to be a Beatles. Well, everyone knows the three names now associated with killing John Lennon. And so, you know, you're going to live in infamy for better or for worse.
Well, let's talk about the attack on George Harrison.
Yeah.
So much like the work of his former band, the murder of John Lennon didn't just affect the music world, but pop culture as a whole, codifying the idea of the dangerous celebrity stalker, which we talked about Selena... And yeah, exactly me. In an eerie echo, former Beatles guitarist George Harrison was attacked in his home less than a month past the 19th anniversary of his bandmate's murder, which I didn't even realize.
Oh, yeah.
The early morning hours of December 30th, 1999, 34-year-old Michael Abram broke into Friar Park, the 62-acre estate which Harrison bought in 1970, according to the New York Times. Like the Beatles themselves, Abram was a Liverpool native who, according to his mother, was a heroin user and began suffering from schizophrenia, according to The Guardian.
Mental illness is just such a common theme.
And
it's
so hard to sort of identify if there's no action involved.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Sadly, after he was discharged from an 11-day psychiatric hospital visit, his mother said to The Guardian, quote, "He sobbed and said, 'Nobody can help me.' I could see the real fear in him." Abram suffered from delusions, believing that the members of the Beatles were witches who were trying to possess his soul, according to BBC News. I love a good witch story.
Yes.
Harrison and his wife Olivia heard the sound of breaking glass while they were in bed, and when Harrison went to investigate, he came upon Abram, who was holding a kitchen knife. According to the Independent.
Difference between men and women. Like, if I heard something and I was in bed, I would not go to check it out. I would leave the fucking house.
By the way, not all men, because I would definitely join you by running out of the house.
Right, exactly. You'd be the first out.
I would
It'd
jump out the window.
It'd be a hole-shaped John Wall.
For sure. Absolutely. Like a cartoon.
Yeah, like through you, running through it.
That's me. Dust, you know, dust cloud
behind
me.
Exactly.
like Wile E. Coyote or something.
Yeah.
Anyway, they began fighting, fell to the floor, and at which point Abram began repeatedly stabbing Harrison in the torso, puncturing his lung. I did not know any of this, by the way. This is crazy. In a written statement read at court, according to The Independent, Harrison said, quote, "I vividly remember a deliberate thrust of the knife into my chest and immediately felt my chest deflate and felt blood enter my mouth. I believed I had been fatally stabbed."
Imagine that.
Oh, my God. Olivia Harrison heroically came to her husband's aid, hitting Abram over the head several times, first with a fire poker, then a lamp.
Okay.
Amazing. Amazing.
Women.
Absolutely. I love that. At some point, Abram grabbed Olivia by the neck and Harrison somehow got back up and the three of them continued to fight. She had a gash on her head and was badly bruised. Quote, "There was blood on the walls and blood on the carpet. And this was the moment I realized that we were going to be murdered and that this man was succeeding in murdering us and there was nobody else there to help," end quote. She told the court, according to The Independent. So believing that they were going to die and too exhausted to keep fighting, she fled downstairs, and that's when the police came. Because I was wondering, when did the police get word of this?
And you'd think that they would. I mean, granted, it's a big estate, but you'd think they would come quick.
Yeah, maybe they had security at the estate or something. Abram was later found not guilty of attempted murder by reason of insanity and released from psychiatric care in less than 2 years, according to the Daily Mail. George Harrison was already dead from cancer by the time he was released, I should say. Abram later apologized for the attack, according to The Guardian, saying, quote, "If I could turn back the clock, I would give anything not to have done what I did in attacking George Harrison," he said. Quote, "I can only hope the Harrison family might somehow find it in their hearts to accept my apologies," end quote. And it's like, you want to say, okay, we accept, but it's like you tried to kill somebody.
Yeah, for sure. But mental illness, you know, like we always suffer with this here, you know, like what, I don't know, whatever gives the family closure best that they can.
That's a good way to look at it. That's what they deserve.
Yeah. That's all I can say.
After learning of his release, Olivia Harrison issued a statement, according to the BBC, saying, quote, "We can never forget how brutally close Abram came to killing dear George and myself, nor the trauma inflicted on our son and family," end quote. Which is a fair statement.
Yeah, of course.
She doesn't really say yes or no, we forgive you, but
she's like,
by the way.
Right.
Yeah,
maybe
exactly.
That's right.
In 2009, Olivia Harrison won the right to install a barbed wire fence around Friar Park. George Harrison eventually died. Was it of cancer?
Yeah, he died of cancer.
That's
what
I thought.
He died of cancer. Which is also a little crazy, too, because like he gets his life almost murdered, and then 2 years later, he's dead anyway from not natural causes, but you know, something that he might not have been able to prevent. And it's just crazy. Like, I know that like this happens every day and it's just because they're so famous that that's why we're thinking of it, but it's so absolutely insane. And like that is sort of, you know, the negative of being so famous where everyone knows you. You know, you get like crazy fucking nut jobs.
Well, I'm telling you, it's tough for us out there.
It's really hard.
Yes.
Well, though the Beatles would champion harmony, pacifism, and brotherhood in such songs as All You Need Is Love and Give Peace a Chance, the violence of the world they lived in kept knocking at the door, and they actually changed pop music forever and helped inspire the 60s counterculture, which upended social norms, but the forces they unleashed nearly consumed them.
Yeah.
And I gotta say, the music is timeless, and you know, kids of our kids will listen to that. I grew up listening to that, and it never felt like, oh, this is too old or this and that. Like, it's just so true, and they have just such great music. And they like, what could have happened if A, George had lived longer, but B, John had really lived longer, and what would have happened there?
As luminaries of like, you know, peace and prosperity, and all of what they were able to give to our culture.
Right. It's insane.
It's just sad. Do you think that this is sort of overemphasized nowadays with social media? Not that this is the exact same thing, but when Kim Kardashian was robbed in Paris, a lot of people kind of blamed her. Like, this is what you should expect. And you should. And I had a big problem with that because she's living her life. She's making her money. Nobody deserves to be robbed.
Right.
And
well, it's sort of like the argument when girls dress sexily.
Oh,
it's like,
yes, exactly.
You asked to be raped.
You
it's
asked
like,
for
well,
it.
I didn't really ask to be raped. Like, to
no
look at me, maybe,
that.
But not to be raped. And, you know, I think that is sort of the downside of being so famous, you know, and like, how can you prevent that? I don't know.
Yeah.
I really, you know, would this have all been different if social media was there? Like, probably,
maybe,
you know, maybe security would have been tighter on him. Maybe John wouldn't have had that autograph or wouldn't have turned around when someone said Mr. Lennon. I don't know.
Well, there's a weird thing that I always have in my head as we wrap up today's episode is like, you know, I think of like 9/11 in the sense of like, you know, back then, safety regulations and like just getting onto the plane and how you can get into a cockpit were dramatically changed because of 9/11. And I sort of like...
Well, TSA was created because of 9/11.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So now you feel, for the most part, very safe on an airplane in the sense that, like, you can't bust through the door like the way they did in the 9/11 one.
Right, exactly.
So, anyway, my point is here is, like, John, that whole thing with John Lennon now maybe set a new precedent for people to be more safe.
Well, let's
hope.
You know,
at least celebrities in some sense.
Yeah, I mean, let's hope. The unfortunate thing is you can't really prevent someone from being crazy and wanting to kill you. You really can't. Just as an aside, though, before we get to some listener shout-outs, a fan had written in our Facebook group that Ringo Starr was on Howard Stern this week.
I listened to it.
Okay, I need to listen to it. Was it good?
It was pretty good. Paul McCartney's been on a few times, and Paul McCartney's most recent one was pretty good. Ringo's just a bit kind of, he's getting to the age where he's a little grumpy from time to time.
He's a little curmudgeon-y. He's a little John Thrasher.
He just knows what he wants to get across. Yeah. So Howard has a tendency of sort of like interjecting. But it was a good interview. It's interesting nonetheless.
Yeah, well, we're happy you're back, Johnny.
Thank you,
guys. Let's end on a positive note now that you're back.
Well, I want to say for listener shout out, I want to thank everyone who sent supportive and kind messages while I was sick. I know everyone gets sick. Everyone gets the flu, but it just kind of really hit me hard. And I just want to say thank you for those of you who really seem to say sweet things. I want to say a special thank you to Kaylee, who on Instagram told me about an app. And I want to tell you guys about it.
Yeah,
this is not
me.
An ad. This is literally, this happened to me. There's an app called Doctor on Demand. And, you know, we see, I don't know about you, but I see these ads from time to time, like, get your prescription right away.
Right.
And I'm just like, do these things work? I don't know. I'm a traditionalist. I like to just go to the doctor.
For sure.
Well, she messaged me and she says, you work at NBC, right? And I was like, yeah. And she was like, well, for you guys, it's actually free. Like, it just is a thing with like the company, with our insurance. Basically, this app, you download it, you fill in your insurance information, and then you video chat with a doctor live on video camera. Exactly like FaceTime. They diagnose you and they have your prescription ready at your pharmacy of your choice by the end of the call. I did all of this within 5 minutes.
I was going to say, how quickly did the doctor call you and how quickly was the doctor's call?
So you sign up and then it's like waiting for an available doctor, which took 1 minute at most.
Okay.
Then you're on right away. You have your consultation. Oh, I'm sick. I'm feeling nauseous. I just threw up, blah, blah, blah. Sounds like you have the flu, John. Like, do this, do that. She's telling me these things on the comfort of my own couch. Then she's like, I see here that your local pharmacy is this pharmacy. Can I send you a prescription to that one? And I was like, yeah. And she's like, okay, I just sent it for you. If they're open 24 hours, it'll be ready for you within the hour. If not, you can get it when they open. Sure enough, it wasn't 24 hours. Opened at 7 a.m. Prescription was ready.
That's amazing.
I took the prescription and it was an anti-nausea and it helped me feel better instantly, by the way.
Wow.
I'm talking the second I took it, I felt better.
Did you get the flu shot this year?
No, I didn't.
Oh, well.
And I have, but I've never had the flu shot.
Right.
And the last time I had the stomach flu like this was, like
third
I said, high school.
Yeah. Oh, high school. Okay.
Yeah, it was high school. So anyway, thank
That's
you guys.
That's an amazing
thank
recommendation, Kaylee. Thank you.
Try Doctor on Demand if you don't want to leave your couch.
Lucy in our Facebook group posted, been seeing a guy for a few weeks and I finally dropped my paranoia about people knowing where I live and let him pick me up at my place for the first time. He came in to use the bathroom and also apparently brush his teeth on purpose. He left his spare toothbrush and toothpaste in my bathroom. Is he a serial killer?
So, Lucy, we wanted to respond to this because we wanted to give you some advice. Number one, are you sure he did it on purpose? Maybe he really did behind. I leave my toothbrush everywhere, by the way.
Well, that's a problem. Well,
which is disgusting.
Maybe why you got the fucking flu.
Maybe that's why I have the flu.
Because for me, I'm not leaving my toothbrush everywhere because I'm an adult.
Okay.
And I care about my toothbrush.
Okay, fair enough.
But I think maybe that might have been a subtle hint for him to like,
can I come back and get my toothbrush?
Right, exactly. Like George Costanza does this on Seinfeld all the time.
Okay.
Like, you know, you keep them in your orbit,
your
like
world.
A commercial jingle. You know what I mean?
Got
so when
it.
You're leaving, you're like, Costanza. So you know, and it's in your.
No, is this Signcast or
well,
Martinis and Murder?
This is a Seinfeld reference.
No, I like it. Yeah. No, I like it.
Is he a serial killer? No, but I think he likes you.
But also, do we know if he's murdered anyone? No. So jury's still out.
Is there blood on the toothbrush?
Yeah.
Then maybe
in that case,
okay,
he either
or
has,
he brushes too hard.
Or, yeah, exactly. Or he brushes too hard. There you go.
He's clearly not shy about leaving DNA evidence at his
Oh, Megan's talking DNA evidence.
That's true.
Megan said points to know. There you go.
Points to know.
And on that note, guys, thanks for welcoming back into your ears.
Happy you are back, Johnny boy.
You're welcome. And we'll see you soon for another shot.
We'll record in a few days.
Sounds good. Bye. Bye.
Whether you're working out, walking, or running errands, Audible can help you keep your heart rate up month after month with their pulse-pounding collection of thrilling audiobooks that you can't hear anywhere else. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, which includes thousands of titles. This month, check out the Audible original, The Space Within. It's a chilling 8-part story about a psychiatrist, Dr. Maddie Weil, voiced by Academy Award winner Jessica Chastain, who is tasked with unlocking the memories of a child who went missing for 7 hours. Maddie soon discovers that there are more who have faced similar experiences, and the truth of what is happening to them may impact the fate of humankind. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500. That's audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500.